Welcome to Heritage, a series of programmes that looks at the heritage of St Albans. I'm Tim Boson, and I'm in the pub, the White Hart Tap, Keevefield Terrace, St Albans. My guest today is Dr John Morwood, President of St Albans and Hertfordshire Architectural and Archaeological Society, known as Arch and Arch, or sometimes SAHAS. Hello, John.
Tim, it's great, and being here, how can I put this, it's so early in the day for us. We're normally here much later in the evening, and I do want to mention to dear listeners that we are drinking coffee here, not our normal alcoholic beverage when we turn up.
Well, you've given our secrets away, but can I start with a question about yourself? Can you tell me a bit about yourself and how you're involved in understanding St Albans heritage?
Yes, of course. So I read history at university, and then I went off and did other things, but I always had a fascination in history. And my speciality, I guess, is the Napoleonic Wars, so everything to do with Nelson or Wellington, and also the English Civil Wars, of which more later. And when I retired, I wanted to take what had been, in a way, an interest and do something with it. And I got involved with a local history society, as Tim's referred to. I'm a president during my second term, and we're one of Britain's largest, oldest and most thriving local history societies. And one of the key things that we've always done is not only do lectures, but we've been interested in St Albans heritage, and that is from a point of view of discovering it through either documents or archaeology, through actually protecting it, of which more later, and also of informing on it so people can understand.
Thank you, John. Well, you've given away our drinking habits, but really, why are we meeting in this pub, the White Hart Tap?
I am so glad you asked that question, Tim. So we are good people, not only in the White Hart Tap, but we are in the beer garden of the White Hart Tap, and that's really important, because if you do come to this wonderful pub, you will see that the beer garden is much higher than the ground floor of the tap itself. You have to go up a flight of steps. And you're really on an earth mound, wonderfully surrounded by trees and it's got a long covering. And you may wonder, why is this beer garden so high compared to everything else? And of course, it's not accidental. What you are on is first and foremost a medieval fortification. It's part of the earth bank surrounding parts of St Albans during medieval times, and then it is repointed and refaced during the English Civil War. So of course, you've got a little bit of it will have been eroded over time, but what I want you to imagine is, instead of a road outside, originally you'd have a ditch. We know from archaeological excavations that this is one of the few places in St Albans where the ditch has actually been looked at, but we're talking about a ditch of probably 10 to 15 feet deep, a bank from the soil that's been excavated 10 to 15 feet high, and a ditch itself 15 feet wide, and the bank itself 12 feet wide. So we are talking, as was put in one of the local archaeological reports when this place was excavated in 1975, we are talking about a substantial earthwork here. And if you look very carefully, you'll see that this earthwork will extend from the White Hart Tap via the Beehive Pub. It's not only a question of pubs, dear folks, but if you then cross the road and go up the up Marlborough Road, you will see on the left, but again the same thing applies. Behind the brick walls is an earth bank, and this earth bank is going to extend all the way on the east side of St Albans to St Peter's Church, and then it would in the past have extended down a substantial part of the west side of St Albans. And that, Tim, is why we're here. And we're also here because I'm talking about a different period. I'm talking about the Civil War. And one of the problems we've got with St Albans, of course, is if you come to St Albans, you're dominated by two time frames. It's the Romans in the wonderful Roman Museum, or it's the medieval period of a monastery in the wonderful Cathedral and Abbey Church of St Albans. But the point about history and heritage is it's about important things that our previous generations hand down to us to look after so we can hand it down to succeeding generations. And it's St. Albans is more than just the monastery and Verulamium.
That's fascinating. We're actually sitting there on a piece of heritage, which is rather good. And you sort of raised the issue already. You've talked about our generation and what we have. But how can you see the city's heritage being used to educate and inspire particularly young people?
This is so important because at the end of the day, if we don't do this, then the next generation won't appreciate any of this and all our hard work will have, you know, been wasted. So I think there's a number of things here. To appeal to everybody, stories are so important. You may remember that a couple of thousand years ago, there was a guy, a teacher in, let's say, the Middle East, who spent a lot of time teaching by using stories. We, of course, refer to them as parables, but they are the things that people listen to and, more importantly, remember. And I was in Jedburgh a few weeks ago, and there was a guide around Jedburgh Abbey, and he said, do you want the normal history tour, or do you want the murder, mayhem and bloodshed? And you can guess what we all went for, good listeners. We went for the murder, mayhem and bloodshed. And it's those little stories that pique people's interest. And so that's important. We've got to look at how we actually make history more interesting to people and appeal to people beyond writing the 10 to 15 pages and putting it into learned academic journals. But the other thing we need to do, and we are kicking on an open door here, Tim, but we don't seize the opportunity of doing it, is communicate with schools. Now, of course, Verulamium Museum and our museum and gallery do wonderful things engaging young people, which is fantastic. But we can do a lot more. Because if we look at the syllabus, if we look at that thing called the history syllabus, of course we know that school teachers are terribly, terribly busy. But one of the things you've got to do on the syllabus is link it in to local events. So let's just pick on somebody at random. Let's pick on Queen Elizabeth I, the best man out of a whole Tudor dynasty and the most successful Tudor monarch. And if you look at Elizabeth, of course she features in the syllabus. But what it does turn around and say is the teachers have to basically provide material to the people they're teaching so that they can understand how the role of Elizabeth plays out in a local context. Well, you may think, what on earth has that got to do with St. Albans? Well, let me tell you what that's got to do with St. Albans. Because St. Albans had, Elizabeth was one of its most frequent visitors. So as a princess, she travelled and she stayed at the home of somebody called Ralph Rowlett. We know it better as it would have been Holywell House, the knockdown in 1835, but she stayed there. In the first decade of her reign, she stays at Lee Hall, the home of Sir Richard Lee, better known now as Sotwell Nunnery, more later. And then on three occasions, she actually stays as a guest of a Bacon family at Gorhambury. And there are wonderful little anecdotes where basically the court arrives at Gorhambury, and how can I put this? They pinch all the Bacon's tablecloths and all the pewterware and all the silver and disappear. Needless to say, Lady Anne Bacon's not terribly happy at this. But these are the sort of things whereby we can actually provide teachers the material they need. They don't have the time to do the research themselves, but we do. And we can make heritage much more relevant.
That's absolutely fascinating. I love the idea of Queen Elizabeth's entourage. Did they, apart from stealing the silver and things, did they steal the guest towels?
They stole everything. I didn't tell you this, but apart from the tablecloths, they stole the napkins as well, would you believe? You know, that's a travelling court for you.
Oh, the very amusing, very funny. This is more controversial, John, but are we doing a good job in preserving our heritage in St. Albans?
Right, this is a very, well, like all controversial questions, Tim, well, the ones that you really need to ask, so good for you. And the question, of course, is who are we? And I think there is a problem, and I'm going to perhaps give an allusion of what happened in the past. In the 19th century, as you know, one of the great landmarks of St. Albans, a clock tower, was going to be demolished by the council. It was in a bad state of repair, it was going to cost money, the council hadn't got the money, you know the story. And there was a public campaign and they were stopped from doing so, and indeed the Ark and Ark ended up taking a lease over the clock tower to actually help preserve it. But there was something different in the 19th century. In the 19th century, the leading people in the town tended to approach things from the same point of view. And what I mean then is that, say, the leading lights in the Ark and Ark, because in those days, of course, the civic society didn't exist, were people of influence. And I was reminded that in 2007, a memorial bench was he put in place in his town to a gentleman called Albert Moody. Now, he's one of the unsung heroes of St. Albans, good people. He's the he's a person who basically turned around when the council were going to knock down what is now the Christopher, or rather Simmons Bakery. They were going to knock it down. He said, no, we are going to preserve these important things in St. Albans. And if you looked at the actual plaque that was erected to him, it said about him that he was dedicated to the preservation of the best in the city. His epitaph is all around you. And he was the head of planning in St. Albans City Council. And I think that if we look at our heritage and attempts to preserve it over the last few years, the situation has altered, and perhaps not for the better. What we do see, as always, is the people that preserve heritage tend to be individuals, and more importantly, groups of individuals. Let's just look at the what we did about 12 months ago when the Ark and Ark, we put together that heritage at risk list, Tim, as you know, and we put certain things on that list. We put things such as the disgusting state of the St. Albans alleyways around the marketplace. We looked at the deteriorating situation of the succubus. We looked at issues of Lee Hall. We looked at issues of the Roman Wall, etc., etc. And if I was going to do a review, which I'm probably going to do very shortly, of, you know, heritage at risk 12 months on, where have we made the real progress? Where have we pulled stuff back from the brink? You know, without embarrassing you, Tim, it's very much, it's thanks to you that you led the campaign on the succubus. You got that restored. It's thanks to you that we got the mural on the Sovereign Way as a first attempt to brighten up the alley. And yes, you do have supporters, but we do need to engage better with the council. And I'm not referring to the elected members of the council, some of whom, and I think the best one by far is Anthony Rowlands. He gets it. He gets the importance of heritage. But for some of the council officers who have got 1,001 things to do, have got massive issues relating to housing target, to a massive problem on the budget, to a need to stimulate trade and industry, it is very easy to forget about heritage. And what we have to do as groups of individuals is form, in a way, a coalition to actually make sure that heritage is not forgotten.
You've come to the next question I was going to ask you on this, which is about the role that people who live in St. Albans, the citizens, can play in preserving and promoting the city heritage, because we do owe it, don't we, to the next generation.
We totally do, and this is why it's so important. And you know, even if you're looking at this as a pure economic argument, and you can't forget the economics, why do people come to St. Albans? Why do people come to live in St. Albans? Why do people therefore pay the council tax? Why do they fork out the money for buying the properties? Why do visitors come to St. Albans? It's because of its heritage, and we must never lose that. And therefore, what we need to do, and what I'd be asking people to do here, is if you do not belong to bodies that have soldiered on for years to promote St Albans' heritage and preserve it, such as the Arcanar, the Civic Society, the work Tim you do in Conservation 500, the question to you good listeners is, why don't you belong to those? Because at the end of the day, it's going to be these bodies working together who other people cannot ignore. And you know, it's not just a question of censure, it's also a question of praise. I'm reminded that in 1890 the Arcanark in a council meeting actually commended builders and shop owners who had restored their various places, including what used to be called the Tudor Tavern in George Street, sympathetically and to conform to the heritage of those places. So but we have to have a mouthpiece here. And you know, if we look at the exhibitions just opened in the St Albans Cathedral and Abbey about in the North Transept about the etchings of Holmes Winter, it's wonderful that we've got the logos of four societies that are active campaigners there, the Arcanark, ourselves, the Cathedral, the Civic Society and Conservation 50. And well, I would ask people to one, join these societies, because the more numbers, the stronger the voice we have. But also, what plays a really, really important part is look out for things. It is very easy for damage to be done by things going under the wire. And I want to particularly pick up an idea that Tom Lucas, one of the archaeologists, has actually come up with following his work in the American Midwest. And this is actually looking at, I suppose the phrase now would be, Native American sites. And what he did was, he working in one of the American museums, he actually set up a group of volunteers, and their role basically was to keep an eye out for things and report it back. You can't expect them to go and restore something, that's the job of a museum staff, but you certainly can if something goes wrong. So if you see something going wrong, if you see people, how can I put it, like that idiot using the remains of the Roman London Gate as a bicycle jumping ramp, let us know and we can hopefully do something about it.
That's a fascinating thought. I was thinking at that time, because I know that at the moment, for example, the council have a tree strategy where they're looking for tree wardens. So what you're sort of saying is we should have some conservation wardens.
We should certainly have some conservation wardens. I would love to move to a thing, and this is again has been pioneered outside by a lady called Wendy Morrison. She's been doing a lot of work on the Iron Age hill forts in the Chilterns. And what Wendy has done is basically you own the site. Not you own it in the sense of you own the land, but the local people are responsible. So let's paint a picture here. Let's paint a picture on Lee Hall and Somwell, anyway. So, 3 years on the Historic England Buildings at Risk Register. Not good. The council, we know recently, have refused to put up the area of green in front as a green flag because they can't afford to spend the money on it. And we're talking here not just about the ruins, we're talking about the Broadwalk as well, so the nice work that had been done by the River Ver. And remember, heritage, folks, is not just about historic buildings, it's also about natural assets as well. So let's, in a way, how I would dream this one is, suppose we actually had it where the custody of Lee Hall was taken over by the local population. The school, St. Peter's School, overlooking it, Somwell Residents Association, anybody that's interested. And these are the people who look at the building, they report back examples of, how can I put this, drug abuse and anything else that's going on there. They report back the fact that the brambles and the, you know, clambering over all the walls that haven't been cut back, and that damages all the flint walls. We also, and this is where the Arcanark comes in, we put in interpretive panels to explain the importance of this house, because after all, it is a house not only that of Sir Richard Lee, but the home of Sir Richard Lee, military engineer to the Tudor monarch. So this is important property. But suppose we actually made it more of a community asset. So I'm not only talking about the natural habitat, but there's a green space in front of Lee Hall. Why couldn't that be used for living history events? Why couldn't it be used for plays or performances? And wouldn't it be wonderful if the community got together and we sorted this out? And that's what I'd like to see happen.
That's really a call to arms, which is very good. What, in your view, what are the major threats then to our heritage in the future?
I think it comes from three areas, and it's always the same three areas. One is the easy one and the easy excuse: we haven't got any money; it'll cost too much. Well, you've only got to belong to the Art Fund and you'll see how many works of art have been preserved by the nation, costing an astronomical amount simply because loads of people actually contribute a little bit of money out of acorns. The oak tree goes and works of art are saved. The same applies to this one. So I don't believe the issue of we ain't got the money. The second and the third are much more perverse. One is apathy. We don't care. It's too busy. It'll be all right. Or we'll deal with it in 5 years' time. But we all know with your house, you know, if you leave, if you're losing a slate off the roof of your house and water gets in, it's more expensive to sort out than getting the tile replaced from the word go. So apathy is an evil. The third one is ignorance. You could call these, you know, the financial excuse, apathy and ignorance as the three horsemen of the apocalypse, if I can put it like that. I know no one more. But ignorance is we don't understand the relevance. And that's where we, the Ark and Ark, the civic society, every individual, if people don't understand, that's where we failed.
So more education and a sense of what we've got in the city and how to conserve it.
Absolutely. That's what we need. And, you know, the work that, again, you and the Blue Plaque St Albans team have done in the face of major opposition, God knows why it was major opposition, but, you know, everything we do makes people go, I didn't know that, and it invites curiosity, and that is important.
John, this has been fabulous. Any other thoughts before we wind up?
I think the key thing, I'm not going to seize that as an opportunity to talk about life, liberty and the pursuit of happiness, Tim, because that's what we normally do here when we let the white heart tap. But I would say that I am full of hope. Provided we put in place what we've talked about, I'm sure people will engage with us. And I do see this as a potential of being a wonderful community activity. And if you look around various parts of the country, for example, there is a Folgu, I think that's how I pronounce it properly, or perhaps Fogu, and you're probably thinking, what's that? Because he doesn't do Iron Age stuff, and you're absolutely right. And these tend to be in the southwest of England, and they are underground passageways where our ancestors may have used them for protection, they may have used them for storage, etc., etc. And they keep being discovered, usually when a farmer has got a tractor and the tractor collapses into one of the tunnels. And if you look in what's going on in the southwest, the number of small town communities that have come together to actually help preserve and protect and inform people about these very strange structures, I think that is a lesson to us all.
That's fascinating. I didn't know about that. That's absolutely fascinating. John, it's been a very interesting conversation indeed. And congratulations on all the good work you do with the Ark and Ark. And thank you.
Tim, my pleasure, and well done you as well.
I was talking to Dr. John Morwood, President of St Albans and Hertfordshire Architectural and Archaeological Society. Can I thank the sponsors of these heritage programmes? St Albans Cathedral, St Albans and Hertfordshire Architectural and Archaeological Society, City and District of St Albans Tour Guides, and Conservation 50.